So what we're looking for when we look at these records, you know, some of the things that we really need to have and things the adjusters really want to have is going to be all of the records post the date of incident.
Yeah, that first doctor visit, whether it's their primary care the next day or an urgent care or the emergency room, like we have to have those records. We can't get anywhere without those. And so if we don't have them, we are going to subpoena them. So, you know, it's really great. And, you know, look, we get that sometimes you're up against statute of limitations issues and we're all scrambling to get records. And but that's going to be numero uno. We just have to see that.
And past records for a similar injury. I mean, if you have the opportunity and you know that your client had a similar injury, but it's something that they had treated, had resolved, that's something that's going to turn up in discovery. And so go ahead and start getting those records now, because that's going to help everybody evaluate the case faster and actually just put it on a fast track for getting to the right place, you know, where the parties could possibly resolve it.
Yeah, if we have records showing that they had this injury but they haven't had any treatment for it for 5 years before the accident, that's going to help us clear that hurdle with the adjuster, who's going to say, well, I want to know about this and I want to see all the records, because there's one mention of it in records after the accident. And so she's right, that fast tracks us through all of that and gets us past that issue.
Pharmacy records, you know, a lot of time the pharmacy records are going to show information, maybe a doctor we've never heard of that is prescribing oxycodone over a couple of months period, maybe a year before this accident. That's really going to draw our eye. Mm-hmm. We would like an explanation for that, especially if this is somebody who's claiming ongoing pain or future pain and suffering. And so, you know, that's something that we need, that our side is going to need to be able to evaluate the case.
And it might be that they had a dental procedure and, you know, it's a non-issue, but they're going to want us to get those records and see what's going on there.
Billing, you know, comparing billing with visits can be an issue, and I know that you had a story for that, right?
Yeah, I had a case where the doctor's records did not document. It was like, you know, the doctor's records only documented one chiropractic adjustment, and the billing was like, you know, 14 different things. It was EMS, and it was hot and cold packs, and it was, you know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes of physical therapy and all these things. And that really hurt the chiropractor's testimony that, you know, we all know if it's not documented in the medical world, it didn't happen. And so, you know, I think that the jury was more harsh with that doctor than they would have been, just because they sort of felt that, you know, there was overbilling going on. So we are going to be looking at that too. Is the billing consistent with the treatment that's being rendered?
You know, we obviously look at the objective versus subjective signs and symptoms, testing that's done by the doctor. So it's always good from a plaintiff's perspective to have that documented, especially if there's something objective. That's really easy to see. It's easy for a jury to see. It's easy for a claims rep to see, you know, scratches and scrapes and bruises. And if those things are actually noted in the medical records, that can be really helpful. Mm-hmm. I also was thinking earlier today, you know, one thing that I have run into sometimes is there will be some doctors, some treating providers who prepare reports that look, you know, they're like a 12-page report, you know, wow, 12 pages of information about this client. But when you look at it, it becomes really obvious that it's a form type of report. They may even switch the genders accidentally and call it a he instead of a she, or put in a wrong name or something that obviously shows that it doesn't belong to this plaintiff in this accident. And I think that that is going to make that treating provider look a little suspect, and it's just not going to look good. So also really paying attention to those kinds of issues, you know, possibly addressing that with the doctor before that doctor's deposed. Or, you know, put on the stand could really help your case.
And the last one on this is health insurance, and we know it's a touchy subject, but it is what it is. I mean, insurance companies get real aggravated when people have health insurance and don't use it. In my experience, and look, it's your client's right not to use health insurance, and I'm not making a judgment call on that, but I will say this. My experience has been from the defense side that when you've got someone who has $180,000 worth of billed medical and they have Medicare, and let's say they use their Medicare and it's, you know, the Medicare paid 20 for it, it's going to be easier to put more money in your client's pocket if we're trying to clear a $20,000 hurdle than if we're trying to clear a $180,000 hurdle. So, you know, just from our perspective, you know, I'm trying to get the adjuster to put as much money on the table that can go into your client's pocket as possible. And so to tell them, you know, it's $180,000 worth of medical, they didn't use Medicare, we all know that would have been a lot less. Now you're going to have to pay $180 plus, you know, maybe twice that in order to get the case settled, whereas you could have paid $180 and put more in your client's pocket than you would have the other way. So, you know, from our perspective, it's very helpful when a patient uses their health insurance.